Hi, I'm Rob Grizz and I'm the producer of Australian Rock of Ages, and it's a pleasure to bring you another program in this series of 24 monthly programs that will feature the life and time stories of some of the people whose talent, skills and dedication have contributed to the development of Australian music, particularly through the 1960s and 1970s. In this program, we feature the story of Mick Hamilton. Mick, thanks very much for inviting me into your home and agreeing to speak with me. A lot of people listening would be familiar with Mick Hamilton, the musician, but hopefully we can get a little bit more out of you today and find out some about Mick Hamilton, the person as well. And maybe a good place to start is by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
Right. I can still remember that. Well, I don't remember the actual event, but I still remember the date. And I was born the 1st of February 1947. Bloody hell. And I was born in Elstonwick, which is not far from where we sit now.
No.
Having lived in various places around the world and around Australia, I've come back to within, you know, 5 or 10K of where I was born.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to know how many people do that.
Well, they say you should return to your roots.
Yeah. So I was born in Elstonwick at the Hopetoun Hospital, I believe, but that could be, I could have that wrong.
Well, as you said, you can't remember that event, but no. What would be your earliest memories that you can recall?
Earliest memories. Okay, well, I can't think of one particular event, but I can. The earliest things, or the earliest sort of general things I can remember were, we lived in Elstonwick in Hotham Street and in a big old rambling house, and for some reason, and I've never quite understood it, we lived, it was our grandparents' house, or my grandparents' house, my mum's mum and dad, and for some reason there was a bunch of us living in the house. That was my cousin and her parents, me and my parents, and my nana and pop. Now, I don't think it was because of economic circumstances. I think it may have just been the fact that there was a big house and lots of space, and families were perhaps a bit closer in those days than they are now. But my early memories of that house, and things like my dad would go off to work and I would know roughly what time he was coming home each night, and I would run down the drive to meet him. And I wasn't allowed out onto Hotham Street because it was quite a busy street even in those days. So something I've probably stuck with a little to this day, I stuck to the letter of the law. I stood right at the end of the driveway and leaned my whole body out into the street to see if I could see him coming. And to a certain extent, I'm still a bit like that today. I'll push it to the limit to do whatever I need to do to get the job done. Not quite break the law, but I'll bend it to the point where I can get away with it. So that's probably the earliest thing I can think of, and I don't know how old I would have been then, maybe two, something like that, I guess.
What sort of person was your dad?
As a person or as a...
When you think about your dad now?
We weren't particularly close family, I've got to say. In those days, I think, as a little tiny kid, I think we were probably reasonably close, but as I grew up, there was never any great warmth that I can remember in the family. It was never abusive or even remotely unpleasant. It just wasn't a particularly, you know, not a lot of love physically shown and not a lot of warmth as I remember. But that could have been a product of the times. I don't know.
What about Mum? What sort of person was she?
Sort of. It's hard to say. A little bit fussing, as I remember, always trying to do more than was really required. Maybe as I got older, maybe a bit uncomfortable. Just sort of, okay, all right, Mum, it's enough. All right, done. You know, and it even pressed on into my teenage years when I started playing in bands, and you know, the guys would come around to rehearse or something. Mum would be in every half an hour with a cup of tea and some crumpets or biscuits or something. For God's sake, Mum, bugger off. We're trying to actually work. This is actual work, you know. And so I think, yeah, she was that sort of person. You know, she wanted to, and she, you know, she meant well, obviously, but it was just a bit too much fussing.
Yes, I think that was definitely a generational thing. Yeah, I think possibly. All our mothers were like that, yeah. Mm. What about school? You obviously went to school. What are your memories of primary school? Were they good?
Not really. They were okay. I mean, I went to a Catholic school, which, for better or for worse, run by nuns who were... I probably shouldn't get into that. They were bloody officious martinets, really. Mm. I mean, I got recollections of getting the strap a few times, and a couple, I probably even deserved it, but a couple I certainly didn't. I got the strap for one notable occasion. I asked if Adam and Eve were the only people on earth and they had two sons, where did the rest of us come from? Well,
whoops.
That seemed like a reasonable question. Yes, I suppose I was 8 or 9 or 10 or something, you know. I didn't understand. I didn't know. I just wanted to know, you know.
Fair question.
I come from a mum and a dad, so
where's the mum?
Yeah. So, you know, I didn't get an answer, but I did get the strap for that one.
Certainly encourages you to follow the religion, doesn't it? Yes, as a young person when that happens to you.
It sure does.
I wonder why.
And the other time I got the strap that I certainly didn't deserve it was we were asked to draw a picture of our home life. You know, obviously none of us were great artists in single figure ages, you know.
Yeah.
But I drew, I think, a kitchen scene, mum cooking dinner, dad and me at the table. Unfortunately, my mum was quite a buxom lady.
Oh, whoops.
So I drew her with breasts.
Buxom lady, yeah.
And I got the strap for that one. So that was
not
sort of...
Not quite sure what all these lessons are for, but...
That was primary school. Yeah, yeah. But having said that, I was, you know, I think they educated me fairly well.
Mm.
In fact, when I started school, I was fairly precocious in as much as I could read before I started school. I could even write a little. My nana taught me to read by teaching me to read the newspaper when I was 2 and 3.
Well, that's pretty unusual.
Yeah, and she also taught me to play euchre and poker as well. So when I started school and I went into the prep, I think was what the lowest grade was called, it became pretty obvious that I was wasting my time there, so they shot me up the next year straight to grade 2, so I never did grade 1. Consequently, I was a year ahead of everyone else at school and therefore a year younger.
Yeah.
Which was fine at primary school, but when I hit high school, it was a bit of a shock because I actually started high school when I was 11 and 2 days old.
Well, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
You'd stand out.
I sure did, because I was little anyway.
Yeah.
So I stuck out like a sore thumb, you know, and you look at my old school photos from high school, it's all these, you know, rough ragtag adolescents and this little kid, you know. So...
I'd like to follow the high school thing in a minute, but just going back to your experience as a younger kid at primary school, did you have many friends?
At primary school?
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't see any of them anymore, I got to say, the primary school ones.
Yeah, of course.
One was shot dead in his driveway during the gangland wars, in Sydney, this was. Others I hear about from time to time, but most of my friends at that stage were kids from the street rather than kids from school.
Right.
Street
gangs were a pretty big thing, and I don't mean street gangs just in terms of being with gangs of kids. These days, when we look around, us, kids of all ages have generally got their faces in screens of one sort or another.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case for you in your generation because the screens didn't exist. It was very much an outdoors thing. Do you remember sort of playing outdoors much?
Well, yeah, we used to play football in the street, you know, which was bloody suicidal, really, when you think about it. But we got away with it, and it's also pretty strange because we had quite a big park just 2 blocks from our place, which we played in, but
the street was it.
Street was the go. But yeah, it was always outdoors. we also used to, I'm just thinking we used to go fishing, but I think it might have been a bit later. Yeah, it was pretty all pretty local stuff, and it was mainly football and cricket in the street.
Mm.
And if you got a bit more organised, then you'd do something over the park.
So when you went to high school, being a lot younger, is it a false assumption or a safe assumption that you'd found it hard to make friends at high school?
No, I sort of did, and to the point where I've still got some of them today, you know. So the kids that I met in that first year when I was 11 and they would have been 12, doesn't matter now, I'm 69, no. They're 70.
What the hell?
Much difference.
That's right.
I made friends, but I always felt a bit left out, not left out, a little different, and partly would have been the age thing, but also music was becoming a big thing in my life at that point, because when I was 11, it was 1958, and rock and roll was really kicking in.
So radio played a big part of your
life at that stage? Huge, yeah. And I was in a school of 1,100 kids, and I think there was only, half a dozen of us that liked rock and roll. The rest were all into jazz. The rest were all into duffel coats and desert boots and going to jazz clubs, which was considered cool. And the half a dozen of us that were into rock and roll were considered pretty much pariahs.
Yeah.
Once again, the friends I've got now are still those from that half dozen.
So 11, 12, 13 years of age, you're starting to sort of tune into the rock and roll scene, but you're still too young to actually go out to find it, aren't you? So where did your music come from?
I don't know where it came from. I think...
How did you meet your needs to listen? I mean, was it purely radio?
It was radio, yeah, because there was nothing else. There was nothing else. It was radio, and it was mainly Stan Rofe, from memory, on 3KZ. He was our hero. But for some reason, I mean, I wanted to play. I definitely wanted to play. My dad liked music. He could play piano a bit, but he was never really a musician, certainly not a professional one. And he did take me to some very early concerts, notably Big Joe Turner and Bill Haley and the Comets and Laverne Baker and also Louis Armstrong. These are all festival hall things.
Mm.
And Spike Jones too, which
bit left field there.
Yeah, it was left field. I love Spike Jones and still do. I had this thing. I think I wanted to grow up and be Elvis Presley, but as I got older, I realised someone had already done that, and it was him.
Mm.
So I thought I would just be something along those lines. But when I was 11, I wanted to get a guitar and play. My hands were too small and too weak to play the guitars of the time. A cheap guitar in those days was sort of akin to a board with fencing wire.
Yes. It
wasn't easy to play. You know?
No.
And I just couldn't do it.
I still have no, to this day, they're gone, all the fingerprints.
Yeah. So what I did was ended up playing mandolin, which was smaller, much easier in the hands.
Yes.
So I did that for a couple of years and learnt mandolin. So that was my basic music training. And then when I was 13, I was old enough, able to handle the torture instruments of the time, which were called guitars, you know. So I got one, and really I'd like to say I never looked back, but I never stopped.
Yeah.
I certainly look back a lot.
Yeah. So that would have been around about 1960, so
yeah,
really the rock era hadn't been surpassed yet. It was still...
It was on the decline.
If you look back at that period, it was really about the emasculation of rock and roll.
Yeah, it was. It was about the bobbies. Yeah. And all the bobbies were coming in and... rock and roll, what I liked as rock and roll, Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis and all that stuff, was all sort of becoming a bit watered down until 1963 when the Beatles sort of kicked it in the butt and it all started again.
Was that a big moment for you, that period when the British music started?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, completely. Because I used to just I was a bit obsessive about it, I think. I used to carry my little Sony transistor radio around with me everywhere. It'd hang in the car because we didn't have a car radio. It'd hang in the car off the hand... What do you call those things? The hand holders at the top of the window, right, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to hang off there and go bad as you turned a corner. And I'd just have that on in just waiting to hear the new Beatles song, whatever it might be, you know. So, yeah, that was big. It was huge. It was sort of gave me new hope that rock and roll was still around.
Mm.
You know?
Had you started to get in your own mind at that stage that you wanted to be in a band, or was that something you had?
Yeah.
But it obviously hadn't happened yet.
No, it hadn't happened yet. It was a bit of a pipe dream. I used to have a mate who played sort of Jerry Lee-type piano, very rough and ready. He was never properly trained. And in some ways he was way better than me in as much as he could thump out pretty much anything, whereas I was just coming off a couple of years of actual music lessons, and I sort of needed to analyse and work things out. He'd just sit down and thump them out, and always envied him that. So he used to come. I had an old player piano in my bedroom. Player piano being one of those ones with the pedals that you mm-hmm. put rolls in.
Mm-hmm.
He used to come around to my place, and he'd sit in the bedroom with me, and he'd thump away on this old piano, and I'd bang away on a guitar, and that was as close to a band as we came, really. You know, it was fantastic. It sounded just like the best records. Fortunately, there's no record of it, so you can check that statement.
I don't know. You know, sometimes I look back at that period and think that is a shame that we didn't have any way of recording. Yeah. I mean, you know, but however. So you're obviously still going to school.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad saw the music at this stage as a sort of just a fad, a hobby, or...?
Yeah, I think so. They bought me a cheap acoustic guitar, and I said, oh, I need an electric guitar. And they, you're not going to get an electric guitar until you can show us that you're serious and you really want to play. So it was a couple of years before that happened. I had to do my time and prove that I wasn't going to just throw it away after a couple of months.
Most of us in our generation, our parents had these ideals of what they wanted us to be. Did your parents have something in mind that they wanted you to be?
I don't think they had any particular occupation in mind. Not that I can remember anyway, but they did want me to complete my education. Now, what that meant at the time, whether that meant matriculate from high school or go on to university, I don't really know, but that was the thing I remember. Oh, you've got to complete your education. You know, that could mean anything. But that was really the only thing that, although I've got to say my dad was a public servant. He worked for the PMG, which was the Postmaster General Department. And he always used to say, oh, you know, you can't go far past the public service, son. You'll always have a good pension. You'll always get this and that. And always have security. And, you know, he was right until he wasn't, when it all went to hell.
Yeah,
you know, but he wasn't to know that. So, in fact, I did join the public service for about a year and a half.
Yeah, I was just wondering, well, first of all, how long did you stay at secondary school for?
Well, I stayed as long... It's a strange story. I wanted to join the police force as a forensic scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Where I got that idea from, God knows, because it's not like if you watch TV now, every second TV show is about forensic criminology and stuff. There wasn't any of that back then.
Oh, no.
But that's what I wanted to do. And so I was breezing along at school. I'd come out of primary school with flying colours. I'd topped the class all the way through. Ripped into high school, found it a bit more challenging, but still was doing pretty well for 4 years. Whilst I had this dream alive of joining the police force and being a forensic scientist. Then I found that... you, in fact, couldn't join the police force unless you were a certain height, even if you wanted to work in a laboratory.
Oh, yes, of course.
So, sorry to bring the height thing up, Rob, but you would have encountered it.
We both can relate to that.
So that sort of scuttled me, really. I thought, well, that's stupid. I just want to be looking at a microscope in a laboratory. I don't want to be out, chasing bad guys.
Yeah.
So that sort of...
threw you for a loop a bit?
Well, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I just thought, well, what's the point? You know, I just this science lark. I mean, I don't really enjoy it. I'm only doing it so I can be what I want to be.
Mm.
So I sort of threw in the towel after fourth form, and I struggled through fifth. You know, I can't remember the marks, but I'd sort of gone from high 80s to maybe 60s or something, just because I just wasn't interested anymore. And I'd already set my sails for a science curriculum, which was bloody tough, you know, particularly when you'd lost interest. So I did the trick and failed. And then I repeated it and got halfway through and just said to my parents, this is...
pointless.
Just a total waste of time. I don't want to be here. I'm not going to learn anything. I'm not learning anything I'm ever going to use in my life because I'm doing this science curriculum, and I just don't want to do it anymore. I'm not going to, you know. So I did join the public service. You know, mid-year, I bailed and joined the public service, which I was in for a year and a half.
You know, which was, what years were this approximately?
Would have been 64 and 5.
Okay.
Last half of 64 and the most of 65.
So you're in your late teens now.
Yep.
Yeah. So now you've got the freedom that that brings. You're also getting out and about and doing things.
Mm. I was also playing in bands at the time, too.
Okay. So when did the first band happen?
When I was 15, still at school. So I would have been in fifth year. Yeah. And I was like the mascot. I mean, these other guys were, you know, these were men. These were young men. I was a 15-year-old midget, you know, really. But I could play, you know. I actually could play, and so could they. I mean, I'm not saying they couldn't, but for some reason I ended up... I think my music teacher, I think my guitar teacher recommended me to them, and I think when I turned up they sort of stifled a giggle and but then I played...
The giggling stopped very quickly.
Well, I won't say... Yeah, that's not like... No, I won't say stop very quickly, but I think they thought, oh, well, he knows what he's doing, we'll do it. They also had a female singer, and she took to me, you know, not in a sexual way, but like a mother almost taken under the wing. And so that was a band, and there was a couple of guys in that band who went on to be in quite famous Australian bands as well.
What was the general... theme of the music you were playing then? What were you...
Well, it was throwback, really. We were playing old rock and roll. Well, I was 15, so it was, 1962, so the Beatles hadn't come along.
Yeah, it has to be rock and roll, yeah.
It wasn't the pop of the day. It was the older rock and roll, the Gene Vincents and the Chuck Berrys and
that. Yeah. Okay, so by the time you've hit the public service, the music scene in Melbourne is really exploding. I mean, there's...
Pretty much.
Yeah, clubs and things popping up absolutely everywhere.
Well, towards the end of it, yeah. So 64, not so much.
No, by 67 it was. 65.
65. At the end of 65 was when I left, yeah.
Yeah. Did you used to frequent those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As much as possible. I can't remember when... Well, 66, I think the Thump and Tum opened in February or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, that was... I was at that opening, and that was just after I'd left work, so I was actually able to stay out all night then. I didn't have to get up for work, so I really was free in that respect, you know. There was just no restraints. I could sleep all day.
Were you living at home then?
I was, yeah.
Right. And no income?
I had the band income at that point, because we were actually working a bit.
This is still the same first band?
No. I'd moved on.
I thought you might have.
Been through a couple. Then I went through another band after that. And then I joined a band called The Moods. And The Moods were my first recording band. And we snagged a spot supporting The Stones on their second tour.
That was a pretty big deal.
Oh, it was huge. It was huge.
This program is a Handsome Doc production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.